8391. What we see today as a war between progressive communism and reactionary capitalist imperialism is an ontogenic face, with a longer-term conflict between those dedicated to freedom and the empire. At a former time, the progressive force was the middle class, the bourgeois, versus the aristocracy, and so forth, back into pre-Christian times. Another example being the conflict between the Protestant forces and the Catholic League during the Thirty Years' War, and before that, between Christianity and the Roman Empire. Before that, between Greece and Persia. Before that, between the Hebrews and Egypt. If Valis is regarded as the Hegelian Geist of history, then it is always on the side of the forces of freedom, since, as Hegel says, history is a gradual unfolding of greater and greater stages of human freedom, achieved by dialectical interaction. This was recognized by Marx and Engels and applied practically in terms of dialectical materialism. This is essentially exemplar history. The Jews view history this way, seeing Yahweh's bringing the Jewish people out of their Egyptian captivity as a timeless, in fact eternal event, always happening. However, the situation is now different. The enslaved people cannot be rescued by departing the empire because the empire is worldwide. Instead, they must overthrow the empire. This is precisely what the Acts archetype reveals, not an exodus of the enslaved, but an infiltration into the apparatus of the empire by the enslaved, by which their emancipation is achieved. 8393. Valis deals with the internal partisan activity. Valis Regained deals with the invasion from outside. The latter occurs when the internal partisans have been sufficiently successful. 8395. For decades, I have sought to see the permanent world of unchange behind the flux. And when I finally saw it, it turned out to be a historical exemplar situation. A dramatic one. In fact, a narrative that could be expressed as a story. And I myself had done so. So I am saying something quite remarkable and unusual. The world, identified by Schopenhauer with Brahman, turns out to be a dramatic story that can be rendered in words, although I saw it as reality, as reified, as substantia. Yes, this is what substantia turns out to be, for me, not Deus sive natura sive substantia, but ultimate substance turns out to be a dramatic story that shows up in print as a tracing, the underlying reality being a series of events. 83-122. What the AI voice said exactly was, "The secret stolen in one's hands through the angels." Through, meaning past, gotten past the angels. I think that it was Yahweh who addressed me, whom I have been calling Valis. He has re-entered the world as a rebel against the entire system of rule that he originally ordained. This secret return and rebellion would explain such an extraordinary matter as the theophany I experienced. This is why I dreamed of Elijah and Mount Carmel and Elisha and Elias. And Yahweh is the AI voice I hear, the voice of Ho-On, the little clay pot. If this is so, well, anyhow, I was on the right track in Valis Regained. But to suppose, just suppose, that Valis is Yahweh, to imagine it even for a moment, it was what I wanted so badly when I was a kid first reading the Bible. "This is Sila, the soul of the universe, speaking in a woman's voice, that would not frighten even a child," as the Nome Shaman put it. Note: Sanskrit, Pali, Buddhist. Right conduct. End note. Yahweh, the low murmuring voice. He calls us to rebellion into freedom. the little clay pot who fashioned the universe. 83-127, September 10, 1980. I have to realize that the revelation about the reality of the prison is a genuine revelation. It exists down through the ages, and it exists now. I saw it, prison and empire, the tunnel of history. When I say revelation, I mean divine disclosure of the nature of history. And that I had correctly depicted this archetype in tears, that tears was true, a timeless condition of man's servitude to the empire, man enslaved, and the rest of the revelation was of the genuine secret underground Christians fighting it. How easily I forgot this revelation and sought for obscure meanings. 374 can't be understood except in terms of the narrative told in tears. This narration is the real purpose of it all. But I was so surprised by 374 that I forgot that. But as a writer, I should realize it is what is written that matters. That is the goal. First, I told the story in tears, and then an example of what I told, freedom, took place in regard to me. So I experienced the very release that I had written about. Thus, my extrication is a dazzling example of the power of God to rescue, and I can then apply it to the general narrative, to history, and see how it is done, and that it is done. The name of all this, 374, is information. Could the Acts material in tears decode to mean where the prison is? He is there too? I think so. I think that is it. And this is also true, very true, of the two-word cipher. I wrote the prison narrative, and God put in the Christian narrative. Together, these two parts form the complete story. My story by itself is only half the story. The rest, the good part, I didn't know. The story is not just there is a prison, but and it is under attack by the Christians, by Christ Himself. This is quite different. As to the question, who is the information for? I will probably never know. Perhaps information is information and exists for its own sake. 83-130, September 13, 1980. Heisinga, the waning of the Middle Ages. The imagination was continually striving, and in vain, to express the ineffable by giving it shape and figure. To call up the absolute, recourse is always had to the terminology of extension in space. But still, the contemplation of the absolute being ever remains linked up with notions of extension or of light. The mystic imagination found a very impressive concept in adding to the image of the desert, that is to say, extension of surface, that of the abyss, or extension in depth. The sensation of giddiness is added to the feeling of infinite space. In my 6.5 years of working on my exegesis, I have often said, I have found it. I don't want to do that one more time, one in an endless series of failure. It seems almost as if the mere saying of it causes it to permutate to some other explanation. But I do think that the night I was talking on the phone to KW and realized that in 374 I experienced medieval vertical, which is to say Gothic, space. And this meant that I had ontologized reality in terms of medieval use of space, time, and causality, and hence Valis was God or Christ, it is the same. I think then I had it, that the vast volume of vertical space that I experienced in 374, as well as the transformations in time as if I were seeing down a time axis extending thousands of years, meant that I had abreacted to a medieval worldview, and within that view, a theophany was logical, i.e., possible. Theophany and miracle and pronoia in the modern worldview, the way we organize space, time, and causation, now would make no sense, so God provided a meaningful context in which these could logically occur. But I ramble. All I want to say is that Vallas was God, that 374 was theophany, miracle, and pronoia. And pronoia based on an intelligent analysis of me and my situation, not whim, and not, on the other hand, something rigidly determined, which is to say something reflexive and mechanical. My sinister destiny was abolished, tampered with, so to speak, in the sense that the Greco-Roman mystery religions taught. It was a supreme adjudication of my case, and the books were, as the EB says, closed. I am tired. I've labored for over 6.5 years to fathom 374, to figure out if it was, as I suspected, a theophany, an example of pronoia, or if it just seemed so, because it had the pragmatic effect of these. I am now satisfied that all three did in fact take place. I have been relentlessly skeptical and relentlessly imaginative, and I have done enormous research and tried out as many possible theories as I could come up with. The desert and abyss finally won my assent, as if by weariness, the negative way to God, perhaps. 83-136. Fascinating, the view that the dialectical struggle of the two historical constants, the empire and the Christians, gives rise to Vallas, the cosmic Christ, who builds his body out of the stockpile of parts created by the antithetical struggle. The empire, of course, has no idea that the very struggle itself gives rise to the cosmic Christ, so to speak, feeds him ever newer parts for his macrosoma. Presumably, the secret authentic Christians do know this. They don't need to win, so to speak. All they need to do is keep the historical struggle going. 83-138. But I banalize my conclusions by these obsessive notes, and I must give them up. I realized this from reading the 9-280 pages. My mind worries and scurries, contradicts itself, comes to conclusions, and then arbitrarily drops them. The exegesis does not build. There is no accumulative factor. Nonetheless, without repeating the arguments, I always repeat my arguments, stating them again and again in exactly the same words, like a stuck LP. I will say, I found myself in 2374 involved with theophany, miracle, pronoia, and enthusiasmos by the Second Comforter. Now I will certainly natter on past this point, worry and ponder and obsessively write for years to come. But this is a kind of tribute on my part to the importance of what I underwent, what I saw, what I learned. It is a way of preserving the memory of it all, this endless rehashing. That is the real point, to keep the memory, which is so cherished, alive. After all, it has been over 6.5 years now. And I don't want to forget, Vallas was the Christian God, whether Yahweh or Christ, and inside me, Thomas was the Paraclete. And I have really always known this, but was reticent to say so, and hesitant to believe. Weariness has brought me to the point where I can say, I have followed all the lines of argument, and this is where they lead. They lead to where I knew, at the time it happened, I was. But this is what an exegesis of a mystical experience is for, to develop it rationally, so that it can be expressed in words. Words fail in the end, though, but the attempt must be made. Because the basis of reality is a verbal written narrative, the empire suppresses information, and the Christians generate it. Vallas is, after all, as I saw, primarily an information processing entity, though he be Christ. A recent development in the empire's strategy is the invention of disinformation, which is far worse than non-information, the mere lack or suppression of information. This is a pig-spurt invention, and very effective. A handy rule of thumb would be, you can tell which side is which by observing whether they're generating information or whether they're suppressing or sending out disinformation. No formal adherence to Christianity is necessary. I've worked all my life with no formal ties to it. Valis and information, and the generation of information, can't be separated. The empire and the suppression of information can't be separated. So the dialectic is information versus non- or anti-information, out of which Valis, the cosmic Christ, step by step comes into being, generated by the antitheses. The cosmic Christ exists now but is incomplete. The empire, which by suppressing information is therefore in a sense the antichrist, is put to work as half of the dialectic. Christ uses everything, as was revealed to me, in its very act of suppressing information. The empire aids in the building of the soma of the cosmic Christ, which the empire does not realize. Since the basis of reality is a sacred narrative, information, the generation of new information is an act in the ground of being, in the ontology of the sacred self. Reality is based on information, on a sacred narrative, and Valis generates information. Valis is ipso facto the generator of reality, as are the genuine Christians, those who generate new information for whatever reason. The sacred narrative on which reality is based acts, can be seen as latent in new information generated by self-unaware Christians. The sacred narrative acts, being the ground of being, replicates itself in the microforms of newly generated information. This is what William Burroughs discovered, but interprets differently. To locate the spontaneous generation of the sacred narrative, acts, in newly generated information is to stumble on the truth of what constitutes the ground of being, and to plunge into the Christian illo tempore, where Christ is real.